So, David Cohen, I don't want to embarrass you, but I read this as one of the press releases on the IAB site, and I just have to read it. It says from Randall Rothenberg, in less than a year as president of IAB, David Cohen has vastly increased the size of our media marketplaces, brought an unprecedented number of industry captains into our leadership councils, transformed the timeliness of our strategic initiatives, and injected new enthusiasm into our already energetic leadership team. David, I have to sing. I have to sing. It had to be you.
I don't even know what to say to that, other than that's very flattering. Randall has a certainly a way with words. It has been a very, very interesting and rewarding 6 months at the IAB, and I'm grateful to have been handed the reins from Randall, who's been leading the IAB for 14 years.
That's terrific. And everybody is embracing this new opportunity and wishes Randall well and for all that he's contributed as well. Hey, it's EB Moss, and this is episode 20 of Insider Interviews. Now, if you've been listening, you know that this is the insider scoop on media marketing and advertising. And who better to give that to us than David Cohen? He was just named CEO of the IAB. That is the Internet Advertising Bureau. And tell me what doesn't touch things internet these days. Prior to this, David was the president, North America, for Magna, IPG's big centralized media intelligence and innovation arm. And he was responsible for more than like $20 billion in media spend. Before that, he was the chief investment officer of UM. And back in the 90s, he built out their digital practice. David has so many insights about the media, marketing, and advertising landscape. You're going to love this. Here we go. So I want to go back to where it all started.
Oh dear.
Well, in your bio, you describe yourself as a gadget geek. And I think that that is probably the first cousin to a digital wonk. But you definitely were pretty early in embracing digital in like the 90s. What was the aha moment? What really sucked you into that? And if you say Star Wars, I can't.
No, it wasn't Star Wars. I was always one of those kids that wanted to get something first. It was kind of the newfangled gadget that allowed you to do X, Y, or Z. So I was big into like Erector sets and motors and kind of all that stuff. And I think that that followed me into my professional career. You know, when I thought about what was the kind of thing that concretized for me that the world will never be the same. It's almost embarrassing to admit it, but I'll admit it anyway, just to your audience. Like in the mid-90s, when I realized that I can look up somebody's phone number without actually using the phone book, I was like, wow, that's pretty awesome. I saw the death of the yellow pages and the white pages right before my eyes, and I was like, this is going to revolutionize the world as we know it. And little did I know how kind of dramatic that would have been kind of now 25 years later. But that was kind of the thing that I remember back now, which is kind of odd that I remember that.
I love that because you just reminded me a million years ago that when I first started selling radio, we got trained in selling against the yellow pages, which of course was display. And now you're in the like electronic version of all things yellow pages on steroids. So
Something like that, yeah.
well, all right. So then how would you describe it? I want to take us to the present day. Give us the top line of the mission of the IAB, the Internet Advertising Bureau.
Well, if you go on the website, you see what the mission is. I think it's fairly clear, empowering the media and marketing industries to thrive in the digital economy. If you kind of unpack that, double click on it, what actually does that mean? It's a combination of thought leadership, a combination of research, influencing public policy, organizing marketplaces where buyers and sellers can transact activities. It's peer-to-peer interactions. It's learning from each other. In fact, I think over the past 6 months, that's been one of the most interesting and helpful, because as we were all kind of treading into ground that we really didn't know what this year was going to look like, you know, so comparing successes, failures, how are we seeing the world, peer-to-peer interactions was definitely one of them. And then standard setting. You know, I think one of the things that really was appealing to me coming to the IAB and obviously the IAB Tech Lab is that not only could you channel the voice of the customer, set an agenda potentially for the industry, but you could actually go ahead and execute it. So you could figure out what we need to do and then actually use the technical standard setting capability at the Tech Lab to go make that happen, which was particularly appealing to me. And I think that we've had many examples of that. So Tech Lab is kind of the global technical standard setting sister or brother to the IAB, and we work very closely together.
I was wondering about that part. So thanks for being psychic and explaining it. So you also mentioned, you know, the past 6 months, and that clearly coincides your tenure with the pandemic. So
lucky me, right? Timing is everything.
But in a way, it is kind of lucky you, because there's a preponderance of, you know, digital everything as we're sort of shut in. How has that changed any of those elements of the mission statement or what you want to do with the IAB?
Oh, that's a great question. So I started at the IAB a couple of weeks before my official start date, because we were finishing the kind of dotting the T's, crossing the I's, and my official start date was April 1. Interesting start day to start a new job. But I was lucky enough to make it into the office a couple of times before that, so I got to meet the team, et cetera. And one of the things that there was an executive committee meeting that I sat in the very early days, and it really concretized for me the role that we could play at that moment in time when the world was really not sure what end was up, how bad was this going to be from a public health crisis perspective, economic crisis. So we embarked right away on a series of, we called them pulse research reports, to kind of pull the buyers and sellers in the marketplace to give people a sense of, as you're thinking about the balance of the year, what should you be thinking about? And kind of every permutation therein. And we looked at the buy side community, we looked at marketers and agencies, and then we also looked at sellers. Sometimes we did it at the same time, and other times we did it kind of one after the other. But it was a very interesting kind of dynamic where you would imagine marketers and agencies would have a sense of where the market is going slightly before that information was communicated to the publishing community. So they were kind of a little lagging indicator of how things were going. But we did, I think, 6 or 7 pulse studies over the past 6 months just to provide the market with a sense of what's up, what's down, what is the market looking to move into, move out of. There was all the social unrest, racial unrest in the country. So messaging fluidity was super important. So we kind of talked about that. So providing good leadership to our members as to how they should think about their business was really one of the things that we did early on.
So was that a stepped up frequency in those reports?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Got it. And you know, you do terrific conferences too. And I was so pleased to be able to attend the Reach conference and the Audience conference about where audience have gone. So where are they going? and what were your goals going into putting on both of those conferences, or they're sort of parallel?
Yep.
Conferences, I guess.
Well, there was kind of the, it was an outgrowth of the new fronts. So one of my first tasks, when I joined the IAB, Sir Randall said to me, David, what I'd really love you to do is to own the new fronts. And I thought, well, that would be kind of, it would be interesting and exciting. Little did I know that there would be no production facilities, that kind of, it was just that whole New Fronts process was a roller coaster that took us from kind of April to June, and we were very pleased that we actually pulled that off, mm-hmm. and it was quite successful. And to the quote that you started with from Randall's note, I think that the
wait, not my singing. You mean the?
No, I'm not referring to your singing, although it was lovely, and maybe we can do a rendition at the end. But I think that we brought together a far, far larger group of people together. I think that was slightly less to do with me and more to do with kind of the virtual nature of kind of the market. And the first event that truly was us gathering together, right? We were just coming out of our cocoons, and we picked the week that Cannes was supposedly scheduled. And actually, people were able to do some really good production, and people were interested in being inspired about the business again. So that was just very good timing. Anyway, after the New Fronts, one of the things we heard time and time and time again was about driving incremental reach and how kind of audience consumption has changed. We've seen 3 years of audience consumption change in the past quarter or the past 6 months, and we need to do something about it. So knowing from my agency days, September, October is the time when you really are in earnest starting some planning for next year. We thought that, well, it would be a great time for us to get folks together, really focus on the marketer agency community, and talk about where are those audiences going. So this is probably more of an answer than you were bargaining for. I'll get to it, I promise.
I'll take it.
But the truth of the matter is, you know, we've heard this time and time again on many stages, virtual stages over the past couple of months. Linear television has evolved into a connected television, some folks call it OTT world, and we've seen dramatic increases in consumption there, dramatic new entrants into the market, new opportunities to kind of aggregate audiences, which is super exciting. So I think the connected television or the streaming landscape, the new mnemonic or the new acronym is FAST, free ad-supported television, is really one of the lead stories there. And I'll tell you what, streaming audio, the podcasting business and streaming audio all up, many were very concerned that with the lack of car time, travel time, that would be taking a hit in terms of usage. We've actually seen the opposite. We've seen, you know, the growth of smart speakers, the new outlets. Podcasting and audio is getting a renaissance of their own. This year, we published a research study with PricewaterhouseCoopers, PwC, and found that podcast consumption actually went up 15% despite the pandemic. So I would say streaming, period, full stop, is kind of the bell of the ball. That seems to be where people are spending their time. And as with other things that we've seen, as I know that you know, being a student of this business, you know, there's consumers who are driving the agenda, and we as marketers are trying to be fast followers. And in some cases, we follow very quickly. In other cases, it takes us some time. So I think back to the year of mobile that hadn't happened until we talked about it for 6 or 7 years, and then everything was mobile. So I think we're trying to avoid that in the kind of CTV space. How do we ease marketers into that so we can follow consumer usage?
Well, in terms of the increase in streaming and particularly in podcast listening, I will say from your mouth to God's ears and everybody else's, I hope, especially to insider interviews.
Indeed.
So along the track of conferences next month, and this is also sort of along the lines of disruption and how things are changing, you'll have the Brand Disruptor Summit.
Times fast, yes.
I can't. I'll lose all my listeners that have migrated to podcasting. I'm really interested in that topic too. It seems very germane to a lot of friction points that we have right now. You know, that whole retail, physical, digital, hybrid. I want to know how brands might be taking on some of the DTC traits. And you talk about the Warby Parkers and the Harry Razors being the accredited universities of disruption. Is that still accurate? Or are some of those traditional brands kind of eating their lunch now as everybody gets into that disruptive headspace?
Well, that was a multi-part question.
It was. I got back at you.
That's going to... I'm going to unpack it. So yes, we have Disruption Week, which is coming up in November, which we've broken down into three parts. So Brand Disruption Summit is kind of the first 2 days. We have Creative Disruption, which is a day, because I think that we probably as an industry haven't spent enough time on the kind of creative impact. Or, you know, we talk about data and technology a lot, But how does that affect kind of the creative part of the equation? And then we have the IAB Policy Summit, which is another kind of interesting talk about disruption. What's happening in DC is also really interesting to see. So it'll be right after the election. And hopefully we're going to get some really good DC luminaries to talk about that. To answer your other question, though, the IAB is really quite different in the kind of trade association space in that it's got lots of different cohorts as part of it. So it started as kind of a publisher organization and then kind of added ad tech. And then about 2 years ago, added brands to the roster. We have over 170 brands that are now members of the IAB. And that's a combination of disruptor brands and established brands, quite honestly. So, but the whole brand disruption idea, the kind of direct-to-consumer economy, was something that Randall and the IAB really embraced before it was in vogue. And we've kind of followed that over the past 2 years and followed that evolution. So we're building on, we have the IAB 250, which is the top 250 direct-to-consumer brands, which we publish every year. And, you know, you can see from a year ago, what, you know, just take groceries as an example. It was a $1.2 billion, online groceries is a $1.2 billion business. A year ago, it's now a $7.2 billion business today. So we could see just astronomic growth. And once again, the pandemic has poured kerosene on things that we have been seeing evolutionarily change. It has now kind of really pressed the fast forward button. And we're all living digitally. I mean, honestly, our very existence is 100% digital, whether it's Zoom, whether it's a podcast, everything is online. And I think that we are just trying to understand what impact does that have on the direct-to-consumer world. And I think that, you know this as well as I, the established brands are trying to learn from the successes that DTCs have had. They have been born out of a digital mindset, out of a kind of put something in market, put some stimulus out, see what it does. If it works, do more of it. If it doesn't work, do less of it. And established brands are established for a reason. They've had kind of a go-to-market strategy that hasn't changed dramatically over a period of time. And now we're in a dramatic period of change. So everyone's trying to learn from one another. And we're hopefully going to have 2 days of exactly that. How can we learn as a collective about driving growth in a time of particular disruption?
Well, I'll take your unpacking and raise you one.
So, oh,
okay. So it kind of sparks a comment and another question. In terms of the online grocery spend increase, I will drop names and mention one of my recent podcasts was with Marissa Solis, who is in marketing at Frito-Lay, and she spoke directly about that. And when the pandemic hit, everybody was buying up snacks, but they were buying them online, and that disrupted the whole, as you said, grocery business as well and traditional approach to buying. The other thing that you talked about with how much focus we have on creative and brand leads me to my other interview.
You've been busy.
I like to drop names too. I'm so proud of the people that I've been able to interview, you especially. So you're in good company. And I want to mention my interview with Carl Fremont, who's the CEO of Quigley Simpson, because he's such a stomper for the balance between, you know, as they say, brand and demand. So I think that you guys must be at the center of this also. And the Brand Disruptor Summit is kind of emblematic of that. But how do we navigate those brand and demand goals? You know, the awareness with the performance. You used to control billions in media spend. So what do you advise brands on navigating that path today?
Oh, dear. Let's
I know. Unpack that.
That's a tough one. The age-old purchase funnel from awareness to advocacy, I'm not going to tell you anything that you haven't heard before, is probably not the dynamic that makes sense in our current environment. You can go from never hearing of a brand to trying a brand in a half a second if a kind of trusted colleague. Like if I were to tell you, EB, of something that I watched or tried or ate that was fantastic and you trusted my opinion, you just go try it. You didn't need you didn't need to work through the funnel. You go from one to the end quite quickly. So I think that, that's a fact. You know, you think about the funnel as kind of being a vestige or an antiquated concept. Number two is, I think that many, many brands, and this is not a knock on brands, but lots of brands kind of, when I was on the agency side, we would look at what did we do last year? Let's use that as kind of our base. And then let's think about what do we want to change for next year? Let's look at consumer habits and usage and insights, and we'll make some tweaks, and that'll be our plan for this year. And I think that the thing that I would counsel brands, and we talk to marketers all the time, is if there ever was a time for clean sheeting, if that's a word, clean sheeting, I've just now created it, starting with a blank piece of paper and going to market for the first time. Imagine you are a new brand and don't have the legacy of kind of how you've gone to the market. Now is the time. Just do it as an exercise. Now is the time to potentially think about that. And everything communicates. The idea of something is a brand message and something is a direct response message, I think, is also a fallacy. I think that everything is designed to take you to be a believer in a product or service that you might not have known about before. And all brand advertising can lead to direct response, and direct response can have a brand halo and everything in between. So I don't think it's as black and white. And I know Carl is a dear, dear friend. I've known him forever. He is a salt of the earth, fantastic human being. I see him often. We have an agency leadership council that he is a regular attendee at. So hopefully he's listening.
I'm sure he will, because I'll be telling him about this, and hopefully we'll get to this, but you're both very active in pro-social causes and things like that. So yay, both of you. So let's get into maybe some tactical specifics. What about driving digital engagement? Are you seeing a big shift in how that's being accomplished?
So this is a very pithy answer, and I apologize in advance. The simple answer on the surface is it's super important to be relevant. Understanding your life situation, your life needs. So I always say that for me, as I was considering which university my oldest daughter was going to attend, because we're very, very good in marketing, there was a tsunami of kind of stuff that was put in front of me about options for higher education and what the opportunities were. When I just had a baby, I was interested in kind of all the things that you want to know about that. And if I'm not having a baby, those things are not relevant to me. So I think relevance is really key. And that's just an obvious answer. I think we have to be respectful of people's time. I think more and more the attention span of the average consumer and then particular cohorts in there is getting smaller and smaller. And I think that we just need to make sure that we are not talking to ourselves, not being insular, but respecting people's time and being sensitive to the ad to edit ratio or ad to edit experience and make sure that we are using that in the most effective and efficient way possible. That's the simplest thing that comes to mind.
You know, we can never hear too much of the basic truth and have that as a reminder. And, you know, we talked about increased listening to podcasts and that ad to edit thing certainly applies there. I'm so afraid of that space turning into a slippery slope of too many ads. Yep. So relevance seems to be related to data and measurement and understanding what's relevant to that particular audience or not. So if you could just talk about a big topic these days, cross-platform measurement, how the IAB is helping to drive that forward, and will we see aggregated measurement across streaming devices? Another big question.
Evie, ever since I've been in this business, I would say we've been talking about measurement, and kind of there's a constant ongoing frustration about the fidelity of that measurement and measurement has kind of been a vexing challenge for us for a very, very long time. I am a huge believer in progress over perfection. And I think that we have been looking for perfection in this space for a while. And I think that that's been one of our challenges. I divide the world into two basic buckets. One is how we count things, and the other is how we value things. And they're different, and we haven't kind of really cracked the code on either perfectly yet, but we're making tremendous progress. So counting across different platforms and devices and types is very, very challenging. I consider this to be really in the kind of technical underpinning, technical infrastructure. Who are the standard setters in that space who can kind of understand at the molecular level, how do we count an impression? How does a CTV impression equal a mobile impression equal a display impression equal a linear television impression? We're doing a lot of work at the tech lab on that point. So I really consider our role to be kind of the intel inside, the technical infrastructure to help understand how we count things in a similar way. And then the value part of it is also equally interesting. You know, is the value simply delivering an ad, an impression? Is the value that you've actually encouraged someone to do something? You get into the whole kind of attribution modeling and all the touch points that happen from initial to completed sale. And there's so much sophistication that has happened in that space over the past 3 to 5 years, which has been fantastic. So we will definitely get there at some point. There are no shortage of initiatives in the industry today to crack the code of, could we have a ID that is kind of cross-platform, cross-device that defines EB or David as a kind of virtual ID? There's a technical challenge to a lot of the stuff that we're talking about, but we've had some of our most competitive companies come together to work collaboratively on this, because if we don't figure it out as a collective industry, we will not see the growth that we are all looking for. Because if you can't measure it, you can't grow it. So I think that that's super critical.
You have a big job, man. There's a lot to this.
That's, you know, the thing that, you know, just on that point, not to kind of just go off on a tangent, that is the greatest challenge is focus and priority. And if I was to put my finger on the thing that is the greatest opportunity for us, is to not worry about the noise, and there's lots of noise, but identify what are the critical things that you need to get done. Identity resolution is kind of number one. What do we think about privacy, personalization, and safety? That's kind of the big one. What do we think about measurement and attribution? And how do we make sure that we make the video landscape grow commensurate with where consumers are going? Those are kind of the big three things. And I wouldn't say everything else is noise, but you have to have focus, because otherwise you're an inch deep and a mile wide and you're not effective at anything.
Now, the IAB really touches everything, as you know, convergence and streaming just makes your choice of platform moot. But I do want to kind of hear just like your knee-jerk reaction if I say video, if I say audio, if I say DTC. What's your sort of buzzword bingo knee-jerk reaction to those?
You know, I do the same thing. I do that. I do it a speed round. It's like word association. I say something and you say the first thing that comes to mind. So video would be streaming. That's
bingo.
That's a boring one, but it is the truth. Audio would be podcasts, and DTC would be innovation. That would be the kind of three things that come to mind.
That's great. So now I'm going to do something else that you did, and I stole this directly from you in your wrap-up panel at the Reach conference. So the people who were in your hot seat before, you asked them to dream and say what they would fix that was vexing them today. So what would you fix that's vexing you today, David?
What do they say? Imitation is the greatest form of flattery or something like that? Prepared me right for asking a question like that. Let's see, the thing that comes to mind is for us to solve our greatest challenges in this business, it's going to take collaboration across all parts of the industry. And I think that our natural tendency is to have a not created here kind of, this is my little sandbox and I'm not going to necessarily play well with others and I want to have proprietary advantage. So if I was a dreamer, and I've been called lots of things, maybe that's one of them, I would dream that we would put kind of the value of the collective ahead of the value of the kind of individual kind of group, person, company, insert whatever that noun would be.
It's very humanist of you. And I think that that actually has more legs than even beyond our digital world. And
And
I think that it's a great opportunity for me to then give you a chance to talk about what I referenced before and your participation in some really nice pro-social activities. So I would love for you to evangelize the work that you're doing on the board for Partnership with Children and talk a little bit about that.
Sure, I'd love to. So Partnership with Children, I was introduced to it probably 5 years ago by Bill Tucker, who was an agency compatriot now at the ANA. It was about time in my career where I was really looking at how can I give back in ways that I hadn't been doing before. I do have two teenage daughters, and I was struck by the work that Partnership was doing for the most disadvantaged children in New York City. And I went to a school to meet some of these kids. I talked to the Partnership with Children social workers. These are kids that wake up in the morning and they don't have any clean clothes to wear. They don't have anything. And this is before pre-pandemic. They don't have anything necessarily to eat. They might not even have an adult member in the house. They're in poverty situations. They have crisis at home. And the thing that was most resonant to me when I started learning about Partnership is just knowing that somebody cares about whether they show up to school or not makes all the difference in the world. Just having an adult that checks in on you, that's step number one. That makes an inordinate amount of difference in the development of that child into a productive member of society. And as I got into understanding what the partnership was doing, I got my two daughters to come with me to a couple of the events. And I got them to hear from some of the kids that were touched by and moved by and helped by the Partnership with Children folks. And it made them appreciate a little bit more kind of the lifestyle that they have and what they grew up with, and not to take things as much for granted as they had. And obviously, I've been doing a lot of fundraising for the organization. And being able to leverage the relationships that I've created over my career to the good of folks that are disadvantaged has been very, very rewarding. And I've kind of paid it forward. So I've gotten other folks that are in the industry involved. Helen Lynn is also on the board. So that was fantastic. And we'll continue to do that. I think the only thing I'd say last is, as with other things during this pandemic, there has never been a more critical time for support in every way it takes, whether it's financial support or psychological support or counseling and crisis care. These kids really are going through, everything that we're all going through. You take it and it's just super acute. If you started out in a poverty-stricken, kind of crisis-prone environment and just add a pandemic and an economic crisis on top of that and racial and social unrest, you can imagine that the work that we're doing now is more important than ever. So we continue to fight on.
Thank you for doing that. And thank you for sharing so much about it. And I'll certainly add a link to the show notes to Partnership with Children. It's really heartwarming to hear about that. And you mentioned your daughters at home, and I hope your family is well. I know that there are a lot of post-grad kids who have moved back home. So I think another service that we could do for grown-up children is give some advice for how one might get into the media industry and perhaps find a job these days in our challenging times. Thoughts?
Yes, I think challenging times are in some cases an understatement. One of the things that we have done this year as it relates to kind of diversity, equity, and inclusion, one of the challenges that we have is kind of making sure folks that are in colleges and universities are so inspired by the media and marketing industry that they want to get into kind of this business that we're in. So we've been doing a lot of kind of reach out to historically Black colleges and universities. We invited them to participate. A lot of, nearly 400 students participated in the New Fronts. We are talking about starting an apprenticeship program for folks that want to kind of break into this industry. I don't think that there's a silver bullet or a simple answer to your question. I do think being glass half full and reasonably optimistic, I think that the worst of it is over. And I think that next year we're going to continue to kind of claw our way back to the growth that we've seen year in and year out. And I think that, at IAB, we're a reflection of kind of the health of the ecosystem kind of at large. And we're trying to do everything that we can to grow the overall kind of industry and ecosystem so that we can continue to move the business forward. So I would say for folks that are looking for work, networking is by far and away the tools that we have at our disposal now are beyond compare. Networking and, it's 6 degrees of separation. You'll find your way to someone at a company that is interested in hiring if you just keep at it. So diligence, I think, is important. And I know that we're going through a time of people kind of in being laid off and people downsizing and efficiency measures. I'm hopeful that 2021 will reverse that and we'll be back to the kind of hiring that we have seen in years past.
Well, if anyone can help inspire an industry and help move it forward, I have a feeling it's you. It had to be you. Sorry.
Again, encore. Fantastic.
Oh, David Cohen, what a pleasure speaking with you. I'm glad I got to see you a little, even though most will only hear you through this podcast. But it's been great. And I really appreciate you taking the time and appreciate all you're doing, seriously, to help move our industry forward. Well, I hope you got some good inside scoop from this episode of Insider Interviews with me, E.B. Moss. And I also hope that you'll rate, review, subscribe wherever you download your podcasts. You know the drill, Apple, Stitcher, Google, iHeart. Thanks again for listening.